You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Is Mexican society disintegrating? The country has undertaken an immense war on drugs. The war has led to a huge increase in homicides and major erosion of the political and legal landscape. But the roots go further back. The nation was told it was headed for prosperity when it signed the North America Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, in 1994. But in the decade and a half since, Mexico has become a poster child of the problems associated with neoliberal political and economic reform. The country has gone from food self-sufficiency to not being able to feed itself. To help us understand the situation in Mexico, we are joined by Laura Carlson. Laura Carlson is director of the Americas Program for the Center for International Policy in Mexico City. She is also a columnist for Foreign Policy in Focus, and she joins me on the phone. Hello, Laura.
Good morning, Manuel. Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you for joining us. So why did President Calderón, Mexico's president, undertake this drug war?
The drug war was launched shortly after Calderón came into office. And that was in December of 2006. He came into office by half a percentage point after the elections, and half a percentage point that was highly questioned. There were accusations of fraud, and it's not clear to this day who really won those elections, because the tribunals dismissed the irregularities that they indeed found in the 2006 elections. And before then, the issue of security hadn't been a major electoral issue. But as soon as he came into office, he found himself with a great need to establish some legitimacy. And so he created an external enemy. It isn't to say that organized crime didn't exist in Mexico and drug trafficking cartels didn't exist. Of course they did, and they've existed for a long time. But the framing of this problem as a war on drugs had not been the predominant model up to then. So he comes into office and he launches this war on drugs and brings the army out into the street with approximately 45,000 troops in communities throughout Mexico, particularly in the border area. And this model of confrontation with drug cartels, arresting or killing drug cartel leaders, and interdiction of drug cargoes to the United States has caused widespread violence throughout the country, to the point where there are major citizen movements calling for a new model of security.
So in what ways has the drug war impacted Mexicans?
In some ways, it depends a lot on where you live, because the impact is much greater in the border areas and where there's a real fight for control of territory, and especially for drug trafficking routes to the United States, which, of course, is the largest market for illegal drugs, despite supposed efforts to reduce the demand there. If you live in Ciudad Juarez, it impacts almost every aspect of your life. People don't know when or where they can go outside and be safe. There's army troops, and now especially police troops in the street that are armed, patrolling the streets. There are shootouts in many of the border cities almost on a daily basis. And it's often the case that citizens get caught in the violence that's happening there. And not just the violence between the drug cartels, but also with the security forces. And because of the high degree of corruption that exists within the security forces, oftentimes you'll have a situation where part of the police is working for one cartel, another part's working for another cartel. And this, of course, only increases the violence and decreases any possibilities that the justice system can get the situation under control, especially now that it's been being treated more as a war than as a criminal issue. Mexico has some really serious problems with its justice system. I think that's well known. It's been well known for a long time. But the fact that only 2% of cases are actually investigated and prosecuted has now come to light as one of the major problems in the drug war. This also means that security forces can launch attacks on grassroots leaders or on other types of people that it considers inconvenient and sort of hide those attacks under the cover of the drug war. And this has happened in cases of disappearances and murders of human rights defenders, and has also led to a big increase in violence against women. in places where femicide was common already, like Ciudad Juarez, we're now seeing a huge increase. And that's because violence just tends to generate more violence. And that's the problem with this drug war model.
How do ordinary Mexicans feel about all of this? I mean, it's clearly impacted them a lot. And you mentioned earlier there's sort of been a rise in social movements. What's going on in that regard?
Well, there's a real split among the population because along with this model of portraying drug cartels as an external enemy that are seeking to take over the state, which is really an improper or inadequate framing of the issue, because the drug cartels, what they really care about is doing business. They're not trying to be a revolutionary movement that's going to take over power and run the country in that sense. But along with that comes a lot of fear, a lot of purposeful generation of fear, because when there's fear, public will accept things like the militarization of their communities and the curtailing of civil liberties, which is what we see happening. So there's some people who believe that anything should be done to control the violence of the drug cartels, and there's other people who believe that the drug war model itself is generating a lot of this violence, and that the security forces can't really be trusted to bring it under control because there's so much complicity and corruption within their ranks. This second group has become much more prominent in recent years as the violence gets worse. We've seen now more than 50,000 people killed in Mexico's drug war, which is a huge number, especially for what is an armed conflict that's not openly and formally recognized. Those people are saying that we have to go to a completely different model of security, a model that emphasizes some of the root causes of the violence, and that uses a much less confrontational model to confront the drug cartel, specifically to confront them by going after their earnings, by cutting back their business instead of these bloody shootouts in the streets. And this would mean reducing demand, that the United States would have to take a much more aggressive role in reducing demand in particular, and reducing arms flows and money laundering. But we still see that in those areas, both countries are very, very weak, and they continue to rely on this military model. So the population right now is split in this way. In general, the drug war is really not popular because there's a sense that it's not working at all. And in fact, there's very few indicators that you could point to that would show that it's been a success. Really about the only one is the arrest of drug cartel leaders. And there, what we're seeing is very mixed results at best. What happens typically in a city is that if you take out the leader of a certain drug cartel, then the rival drug cartels see that it's been weakened, and they come in and begin to fight for that territory. So there's some major studies that are showing that, in fact, when you take out the leaders of drug cartels, either by arresting them, extraditing them, or killing them, the violence actually goes up.
Now, what does all this have to do with NAFTA?
Yeah, there's really two ways in which this whole problem is directly linked to NAFTA. The first one's pretty direct, because the drug war model that Felipe Calderon launched in 2006 was in many ways promoted directly by the United States government. What happened is that in 2005, the government signed the Security and Prosperity Agreement, and that agreement essentially extended a trade and investment agreement, which is NAFTA, into the security area. It was explicitly called a Washington-led initiative, and it responded to a Pentagon goal of extending the United States borders to Canada and Mexico, its two NAFTA partners. And you've seen many aspects of this in Canada, as well as there have been rules that have been imposed on security in Canada that correspond much more highly to U.S. national security goals than to actual Canadian national security goals or certainly citizen well-being. The same thing happened in Mexico, but much more explicitly. The agreement was signed, and the United States began to have much more influence in Mexican national security, despite the fact that their national security goals are not the same. Mexico has never faced a real threat from international terrorist organizations, which, of course, was the major concern with the George Bush national security doctrine. The first concrete expression of this new agreement in which Mexico was to share U.S. national security goals was the Merida Initiative in 2007 that George Bush launched. And the Merida Initiative is an aid package that, especially at the beginning, was primarily military and directed to the military and to the police with military equipment, with training, with the participation of private security firms. In order to fight counterterrorism, counter-narcotics, and border security goals. Of course, since then, it's the counter-narcotics part of it that's received the most emphasis and the most press. So this war on drugs model that we're seeing in Mexico corresponds very, very closely to a long-term plan that the Pentagon had in order to increase its presence within Mexico. And in fact, here in Mexico, it's very obvious how it's extended its presence. Mexico has a long history of resisting U.S. interference or intervention in its national affairs. And it's still the case that U.S. soldiers are not allowed on Mexican territory. There'd be a very high political cost if that were to change. So instead, what we see is there are agents from drug enforcement, from alcohol and tobacco, from customs, and many, many different federal agents in the United States that have extended their presence here. The U.S. Embassy now has a whole new building in charge of joint operations between the United States and Mexico. The United States is very involved in Mexican security. All this has raised very serious issues of national sovereignty here and questions about whether this extended U.S. involvement is really in the interest of Mexican national security and Mexican citizens. Then the second way is a little more indirect, but we see it very, very clearly, and I can give you a concrete example. The second way is that the drug cartels, in part, have been able to expand their business because of the demand in the United States, but also because they've expanded consumption within Mexico to some degree, and it's very, very easy for them to recruit young people into their ranks as informants, as hitmen, even young people as young as 14 years old. The reason that it's so easy for them to do that with very low salaries is that the young people in Mexico don't have other options. The educational opportunities have been cut back because of the austerity of the state, which is a part of the NAFTA neoliberal model. And there's a huge problem with unemployment, especially since the 2008 crisis. Mexico was especially vulnerable to the 2008 crisis in the United States because its dependency on the United States is almost complete in terms of its exports, its imports. It's highly dependent on the United States. So if you look at Latin America, it's Mexico that was hardest hit and has had most problems coming back from that crisis. Young people who don't have any opportunities, who are looking at a future of no employment, or of employment in offshore assembly plants called the maquilas, where they earn a wage that's not even sufficient to feed themselves, let alone families, become easy prey for recruiters from drug cartels who promise vast money, more money than many of these young people could ever dream of in other ways. And they become very cynical about their futures or the lack of future that's promised through the legal, formal economy. The example that I was going to give just came in recently from a friend, and I noticed a news article in the paper that said that the army had been brought in to evict 300 families from Matamoros, a border town on the border of Texas, that were unable to pay their rent for public housing. So the first question is, why were these people unable to pay their rent? And that is because under this NAFTA model, many of these border towns have become dependent on offshore production, on the maquiladora plants that are located all across the border, especially in the major cities. This is an industry that pays low, where workers have very few rights, especially organizing rights, and it's extremely volatile. A company will set up in Mexico, and then if it turns out that it's cheaper to move production for whatever reason to Asian countries, which has happened a lot, or that they're going to shut down plants for a while and pull back on production because of cash flow problems or the economic crisis, then the plants will just suddenly shut down. And what happened to these workers who were living in public housing is that they lost their jobs. when they had no income, they were unable to pay. The second question is, why was the army there during the evictions? And that has to do with the militarization of the country that's taken place under this drug war model promoted, that continues to be promoted, under the Merit Initiative from the United States. So as we see the two of them coming together, where the economic problems are feeding organized crime, then they're supporting the security arrangements that are also an offshoot of NAFTA, are supporting the militarization and social control of those people that have been thrown out of a job and are now on the margins of society. And it's what we call here a real breakdown in the social fabric. And when you have the social fabric breaking down, it's much easier for organized crime to infiltrate communities, to take over control, and for the response to be repressive and generate more violence.
Well, I want to thank you very much for joining us. It's been very informative.
Well, thank you very much. I look forward to being on your program again.
I've been speaking with Laura Carlson. Laura Carlson is director of the Americas Program for the Center for International Policy in Mexico City. She is also a columnist for Foreign Policy in Focus. You can read her articles on Mexico at fpif.org.